Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast with James Rapine and Daryl Ryder on 92.3thefan.com.
What up and welcome into another edition of the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast. I'm James Rapine. He is Daryl Ryder. It is great to be with you on a Wednesday. A quick reminder, you can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts, including 92.3thefan.com. Make sure you leave us a five-star review on iTunes. I see the reviews coming in. We appreciate that. It helps more Cleveland sports fans find this podcast. We are your beat writers for 92.3 The Fan and 92.3thefan.com. Got some Indians for you with the regular season just 8 days away. Also going to discuss Odell Beckham Jr. That is where we'll start. A quick reminder, you can follow us on Twitter as well, at James Rapine, at Right or Wrong Fan, and check out all of our writing at 92.3thefan.com. Daryl, it's been an exciting time in Cleveland sports over the past couple weeks. John Dorsey addresses the pass rush. John Dorsey addresses the trenches with a defensive tackle and Sheldon Richardson, who a lot of people know. And then he makes the splash. And we talked in depth about Odell Beckham Jr., how good it makes the Browns moving forward, and all of that stuff. But I couldn't help but go to the website yesterday, and I see the headline. A headline really well written by you. Odell Beckham Jr. posts on Instagram, he's going dark, then deletes post. And I thought about this, and it was before I even read the article. And I have the article up open now, and we'll get into what he wrote before he deleted it. It's like, okay. This is the new Browns now. There's going to be some drama that comes along with it. There's going to be social media. They're going to say things. Think about it. Baker, love Baker Mayfield. He does bring some drama. The staring at Hugh, drama. Not afraid to speak his mind. There's some drama there. That's okay to say. We can admit that and acknowledge that while also thinking he's a really good quarterback. So yesterday on Instagram, Odell Beckham Jr. wrote, PSA, I love you all so much. The ones that follow and support, I thank you and all that. I'm taking an emotional, physical, and mental blah, blah, blah vacation. I appreciate the love. And he goes on and on and on. And I'm not going to read the whole damn thing. It's up at 92.3thefan.com. I just want your thoughts on this because this won't be the only time he does this. We know he's emotional. We know he's immature at times. And when you mix emotional, immature at times with social media, you get that. You get deleted Instagram posts that everyone reacts to. Your thoughts about Odell Beckham Jr.'s post.
Welcome to my life. My new life.
Buckle up, Daryl.
Yeah, I mean, Baker Mayfield takes batting practice with the Milwaukee Brewers. That's a story. He's the first base coach for a couple innings with the Brewers. That's a story. I mean, this is, you know, welcome to journalism in 2019.
Yep.
You know, tweets or news, Instagram posts or news, whether they stay up, whether they're deleted. I mean, it was this way with LeBron when he was here. When I remember the first season, he had the tweet about fitting in instead of fitting out, which was everyone believed it was directed at Kevin Love. And so that was a big story.
Yep.
That I wrote at nauseam about. I mean, this is the modern age, you know. One of the perks of social media is it gives players a direct avenue to their fans. They don't have to filter their message through people like myself. But also one of the drawbacks to that is that, you know, we also in the media have the ability to kind of clean up the message a little bit too. You know, if a player misspeaks or says, hey, that's not what I meant, I was trying to convey this, you know, we can help them with that a little bit. But this is what it's going to be to cover the Cleveland Browns is, you know, when you have superstars, what they do, what they say, whether it's on social media, whether it's, you know, various marketing campaigns that they, you know, endorsement deals they have, whatever, all that stuff becomes news beyond just what they do on the football field.
And you noted this in the piece. He's in Europe right now, or has been vacationing in Europe. You know what I think this was? He was at the top of a rooftop somewhere, overlooking some amazing view that I could only imagine and seen in a postcard.
With a few glasses of vino already down the hatch and another in hand?
At least a few. You know, maybe he had, you know, he had a cigar or something else there, and he was just reflecting. And I got to be honest, I'm around, how old's Odell Beckham Jr.? 26?
Yeah, 26.
I'm 27, so we're about the same age. You know how many times, there are times when you, in that moment, I could totally see it, especially if I was a millionaire, start reflecting, thinking about life, much bigger than just football, or much bigger than what had just happened, and obviously he got traded, which is a big deal in an athlete's life. And just, you type something out, and you want to put it on social media, or you think about it. And I always think of Herm Edwards. Don't press send. And I've done it before, where I've like almost tweeted something out, whether it was just like complaining about traffic. I remember one time I did that, and I went to tweet out. I was like, no, I don't need to tweet that. Why would I do that? It just, I always kind of ask myself before I tweet or post something, should I do this? And
I'm going to give you a piece of advice that I was given when I was young. 90% of the people don't care about your problems, and the 10% that do are glad you got them.
Yeah, fair. But the point is, this is the age we live in.
Yep.
Millennials love social media. They're going to post on social media. So when they're having this...
They can't go to the bathroom without having their phones out.
So this moment...
To document.
Stop being that old guy now. All right. I get it. Yeah, you're right. It was a nice it was a nice sink in the bathroom. Okay. I had to post it. All right. It was a nice sink.
Had a great dish soap.
Yeah. Well, you... God, stop making fun of me. Anyways, I think that this was Odell Beckham Jr. having a moment. He types this thing out, is motivated, is ready to prove people wrong, is tired of all this, and he's in Europe, and he's a freaking rock star, right? And he sends it, and he's like, oh, that wasn't a good idea, and deletes it. I don't think it's much more than that. I don't think, and there is going to be other drama, but that's kind of how I view this. Not a big deal, but it made headlines. You had it. Cleveland.com had it. I saw it on national website. Like, it's going to make waves because it's Odell Beckham Jr. To me, it's just a millennial putting his stuff out there on social media, and I see this all the time. You probably shouldn't do. He realized it, and he deleted it.
I would agree with that. I don't think it's nearly as big of a deal. We haven't had an opportunity to talk to Odell yet, obviously, because he's vacationing. He's a little busy right now. And it's understandable that if there's a little bit of a sticker shock there, you know, spent your career in New York. You just signed a mega $95 million contract extension with the Giants last year. You think you're going to be there. Your GM is constantly, every time he's asked, saying we're not trading Odell. We didn't sign Odell to trade him, yada, yada, yada. And then, of course, you know, John Dorsey is now the godfather. He makes offers that people can't refuse. Got to love that. And, you know, now Odell's a Cleveland Brown. What's good for the Browns is, and I've written this, I've talked about it. I think what will help the Browns is the fact that Adam Henry coached him at LSU. Jarvis Landry's his best buddy from LSU. They played together. So I think that there's, and he's become friends with Baker. So I think just those three people, having them here will help Odell. You know, and I think that, too, you go through stuff, you know. We forget that the players are human beings. Fans tend to forget that. We in the media sometimes, we forget it, too. I admit it because, I mean, God, there have been so many names and faces that have gone through Berea, Ohio. It's been a freaking turnstile for 20 years. Okay, you're the GM for this week. You're the coach for this week.
Why haven't you been the GM yet? Right now you're not going to get your chance. How did you miss on your opportunity?
Because I was never qualified. Albeit I could probably say I was more qualified than some of the GMs.
I was
going to
say,
that's
who they hired the first past 18 years before Dorsey.
But, I would have drafted a hell of a lot better, that's for sure. So we forget that they have the same, and we've talked about it on this podcast. They really do have the same problems that we, you know, they have family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got a wife and a kid and kids and stuff like that. And they have their good days, they have their bad days. And, it's a delicate balance too, because I have always tried to respect a player's personal life. You know, I never like writing about who a player is dating. I never like writing about a player's personal life because to me, that's their business and nobody else's business. To me, the only time that becomes, it, as I like to call it, inbounds, mm-hmm. is if the law enforcement is involved, you know, police get called to a home or something. That to me is about it. Like that's the only time that a player's personal life, to me, is, you know, something you write, unless you're doing a feature story on him and he's talking about growing up and he's talking about his parents.
Yeah. There are times when you get into the personal stuff.
But as far as the family life, the dating, you know, all those type of things, to me, I leave that to the TMZs and the Deadspins and whatnot. That's none of my business. And
so
I
I'm not going to be able to call you Daryl TMZ writers, what you're saying.
Correct. I try and avoid that type of stuff.
I don't blame you, but you're going to have to. And here's the thing is now.
There's going to be some of that drama. Yeah.
And just to move the conversation forward, and he's Daryl Ryder. I'm James Erpine. This is the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. We've seen some legitimate concerns from national media. I think some from local media. Not as much locally, but still some, I think, there are out there with this Browns team. And I want to get into that. I also want to tell you, people are going to hate this, I think. But I think it's a really good comparison. These Browns remind me. You want to know what team they remind me of before I say it? I'm going to say it anyway.
You're going to say it anyway. So
I don't even know why the hell I asked you.
That's called a rhetorical question.
The 2005 Bengals. And people are going to be like, oh my God, you're a jerk. I can't believe it. It's because you used to follow the Bengals and cover them and you know them well. Yeah, you're right. You're right. But here's the other thing. Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham Jr., they went to the same college together?
They played together, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Teammates, no. they're like best friends.
Rhetorical
yeah.
question. That one too. What else? Let's see here. On the field, Jarvis Landry, primarily a slot wide receiver, right?
Fair.
Yeah, right? With Odell Beckham Jr. on the outside. That's how you kind of envision things.
But
right?
You're probably going to split them wide at times too.
Sure. Baker Mayfield. First overall pick. That's right? He went first overall last year?
Last check, yeah.
Okay. The 2005 Bengals were led by Carson Palmer, who was a first overall pick from USC. They had Chad Johnson and TJ Houshmandzadeh. TJ Houshmandzadeh primarily played the slot. Chad Johnson came with some drama. Electric on the field. Right. Played outside. They both played together at Oregon State. And guess what? The starting running back on both teams, SEC guys. Rudy Johnson went to Auburn. Ground and pound, 1,400 plus yards. Nick Chubb, Georgia. I'm just saying, it reminds me. I was thinking about this the other day, and I'm like, my goodness.
Who's the Myles Garrett on that team?
Now, that's the difference, and that's what I wanted to say. The way John Dorsey's building this team, defense was always an issue for Marvin Lewis and those Cincinnati teams.
Right. Considering Marvin was a defensive guy.
Olivier Vernon on one side, Myles Garrett on the other, Sheldon Richards. I mean, he's invested in the trenches, which I think is extremely important because that's what really cost that team in injuries and stuff like that. This isn't a Bengals thing. It's just, it's to show you. By the way, the 90s Bengals, pre-Marvin Bengals, were the Browns. That's where they were. And so I guess if you're a Browns fan here, this is how I'll put it. I've seen one resurrection where a franchise went from the laughingstock on late night shows to Monday Night Football and being the hottest ticket in town and such a big deal and having the diva wide receiver and all that. It didn't end in a championship. I don't know if this
will. It didn't even end with a playoff victory.
Here's what I will say.
Sorry, couldn't resist.
That everything Dorsey's doing makes sense. Plus, he's addressing the trenches, which is something the Bengals didn't do as well as they should have back then. I really like this team. I like the way it's set up. And there's a lot of criticism, and we'll get to it with the Freddie Kitchens thing and all of that. But to me, I just look at it, and it's like, makes sense. All the pieces, they fit together. The puzzle coming together quite well.
Nice change of pace instead of us sitting here saying, what the F are they doing?
You like my Bengals comp, by the way. I'm the only person on the planet that would be able to do that.
I do like the comparison.
In a lot of ways, man.
And there's going to be a lot. This is new territory for the Browns. They're going to be on national TV. You got networks right now are fighting over the Browns.
Mm-hmm.
How about that? Like, they used to fight over, like, not even wanting to put them on Thursday Night Football in September. Now they're fighting to get them on Sunday Night Football multiple times, Monday Night Football multiple times, I think Thursday Night Football, obviously.
Because they have stars.
Right.
Baker Mayfield's a star. Odell Beckham Jr. is a star. And OBJ's probably a bigger star than Baker.
Well, and here's the thing, too, is if they live up to
a bigger star than Baker.
If they live up to expectation, if they live up to expectation, it's going to be a great story.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it.
The resurrection of the Browns and the new era, you know, best team in 30 years. It's been 30 years since they've won a division. It's been 25 since they won a playoff game. It's been 16 since they've actually made the postseason. Mm-hmm. So it's a great story waiting to happen. They're not going to sneak up on anyone, though. They won seven games last year.
Mm-hmm.
They probably could have won more if they didn't keep Hugh. But they kept Hugh, so they are what they are.
Don't blame Hugh.
7-8-1 7-8-1
Zane Gonzalez.
You know, that's what they are. And, you know, but it is a great story waiting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I remember doing an interview with Sports Illustrated a year or two ago.
You went to work for Sports Illustrated?
No.
I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
and I said to the writer, I said, listen, you know, this is when the Browns were the low of the low. I said, listen, the for as great as the Cavaliers went in the championship in 2016 was, the greatest story in sports is yet to be written. That's the Cleveland Browns winning a Super Bowl. Because when that happens, that will be the greatest story in sports. It will be. I'm convinced of it. Because there are Browns fans around the world. You know, you hear about the Cowboys being America's team. The Giants have a big following. Obviously, the Patriots, since they've been good, they've developed a really strong bandwagon fan base around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Browns have been down for so long, that allowed people in Northeast Ohio to change their allegiance to root for the Pittsburgh Steelers because they were good. But the Browns have a lot of celebrity fans, and they have a lot of fans around the world. They got fans in, they got a Browns backers club in London. Like, when they played the Vikings in London, watching that game on TV, it looked like a home game for the Browns, all the orange that was in the seats.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So they're all going to come out of the woodwork. And I know people say, oh, just everyone's jumping on the Browns bandwagon. No, they were always Browns fans. They just probably had to go hide for a little bit while the team, you know, was down. So it's going to be a great story if they're able to achieve what everyone hopes they achieve. And that's ultimately winning one, if not more, Super Bowls. But I think we have to pump the brakes a little bit. And I'm not trying to rain on the parade. I'm just keeping it real. To your point, how you said, you know, this team reminds you of the 05 Bengals.
Yeah.
You know.
Injuries
happen.
Things happen.
They still have to go out and prove it.
Sure.
They still have to go out and do it. What John Dorsey has done is great. He's done his job as the GM. He has provided Freddie Kitchens and the coaching staff with the tools to go out and win football games. Okay? And the players. So now it's on Freddie Kitchens and the players to get it done. The one thing, there's a theme when I listen to John Dorsey talk, when he discusses players, and he talks about passion for the game. That's very important to John, and what he means by that is that I don't need to kick you in the ass all the time to get the most out of you or to get the best from you. You're going to give it to me because you care,
mm-hmm.
because you want to be the best. You want to be successful, okay? Baker has it. Odell has it. Jarvis has it. Myles Garrett has it. You know, that's Denzel Ward. Certainly,
I think Ward has it.
Okay,
he's working out in Miami, by the way, with LeBron. Fun fact: with LeBron's trainer right now.
Yeah,
David Alexander.
So
and Dwayne Wade's trainer.
When you have players that are self-motivated, okay. As a manager. You know, I want people that I have to rein in, not ones that I have to kick in the ass. Okay, and constantly prod and bargain with to motivate. And that is very clear when I listen to John Dorsey talk and I look at the type of players that he has brought in. That is very, very important to him. And so, yes, it is. The players have to go out and do it. But I'm not so much as worried about that as I normally would be.
Because of what he brought in.
Right.
Because we talked about the drama, but with all the drama Odell brings, he's going to be in shape. With all the drama Odell brings, he's going to go out there and ball out.
Yeah,
with
I mean, he's not going to come to training camp 25 pounds overweight.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Baker Mayfield's not
going
to show
up and not have worked his tail off this offseason.
Right.
And that's the thing. That's the you can talk. And you can stare down Hugh, and you can have the social media. You can do that stuff.
As long as you back it up.
If you back it up. And you mentioned bandwagon fans, and I just want to spend 2 minutes on this, and then we'll get to Freddie Kitchens, because I think that's everyone's biggest concern, and I want to talk to you about
it's
that.
It's not mine, but go ahead.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. To me, this idea that, oh my God, you can't get on the bandwagon if you weren't here when Tim Couch and Johnny Manziel and, oh my, it just go on and on, and Charlie Fry, and it, no. Welcome to being good. I lived in Cincinnati when LeBron came back, when LeBron left. There were zero Cavaliers jerseys in Cincinnati from 2010 to 2013. He goes back to Cleveland. Go Cavs! That's what happened. And you know how I took note of that?
Are you trying to say that Cincinnati fans are about to become Browns fans now?
Because I'm a Dwayne Wade fan. And so I was like, oh, look at all these Heat. No, they weren't Heat. They were LeBron fans. I'm a huge Wade fan.
Did you
fan.
Get a Dwayne Wade Cavs jersey since
yeah.
you did?
I have every single one of I have a Dwayne Wade
all
jersey from every
team. All 4 glorious months he was a Cavalier.
He should have been there last year for the finals, but that was a mistake that the Cavs made.
I know. They might have. They might have.
They would have won a game.
They would have won a game in the finals if he was on
would've
the team.
Would have won a right. game.
But I guess from what I understand.
Bandwagon fans happen. You don't think people are bandwagon Steelers fans? You just mentioned that. Bandwagon fans. This idea that you don't want bandwagon fans or you don't want the casual fan, because that's what it is. Bandwagon fans are casual sports fans.
Right.
Who want to root for a winner and want to see a good product.
So basically they're Indians fans.
Damn.
Sorry.
Stop it. We'll talk about the Indians in a few. What are you doing? What are you doing? The point is if you win, which I know it's unknown territory, uncharted waters for Browns fans for quite some time. You're going to have bandwagon fans.
I'm all about the bandwagon fans.
And that's
hop
okay.
on board. Enjoy
yes.
the ride.
Yeah, that's the only attitude you should have. This idea that, oh, if you weren't here when Hugh was jumping in the lake and 1-31, I don't give a damn about any of that. Jump on. And I think a lot of people jumped on Monday night. You mentioned primetime. The more success you have on the big stage, the more fantasy football success. Now people are going to be drafting Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr. And don't tell
forget
me that,
that.
Isn't
people
important.
That have Madden are going to put all Browns on their team.
Correct. Like that, all of that matters.
Baker,
all of that.
Jarvis, Odell, Chubb, done.
Kareem Hunt
when
you,
he's, yeah.
You don't like Madden, 8-game suspension. But by the way, real quick, he comes back like right after the deadline.
For the playoff run.
Dude, it's literally the perfect time. Fresh legs. He's got his... Got to stay clean, got to do what he needs to do and stay in shape, but interesting. But yeah, bring on the bandwagon fans.
I'm all about it. I am not one of these people that, because you already have those fans. You
yes.
already, you already have the loyalists that stuck with the team when they were 4-44, which by the way had never been done in NFL history. Congrats, Browns.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, that's, you know. If you're going to be bad, be the best at it. That's what I say. That's kind of where you're at with the Cavs. But, you know, I have no issue with bandwagon fans. I'm convinced that the Browns are about to become America's team. Everyone's going to fall in love with them. Everyone's going to – because everyone loves an underdog. Everyone loves the reclamation story, the redemption and all that. And then that's what this will be. Now, there'll become a point where you'll be sick of them, like everyone's sick of the – I know I'm sick of the Patriots.
All right.
You know, but it's that's years
in
and years
20
down.
Years,
right,
maybe.
Right. And
if they have the success, I mean, think they could potentially have.
I mean, you know, I was.
And that's a problem you want to have, by the way.
Right. I was watching a clip the other day of, and again, this is the cart getting put well before the horse of, you know, someone was talking about that the Browns are the new dynasty and waiting to supplant the Patriots. Now,
you know how many times that story's been written?
Exactly. But it while it all makes sense. Until you beat the man, you're not the man.
They won 7 games last year.
Right.
They beat one team with a winning record?
Right.
I believe.
They also didn't have Odell Beckham. They also didn't have Olivier Vernon. They also didn't have Sheldon Richardson.
Totally get it.
They also didn't have Kareem
Hunt. They're
much
better, and they're going to have a whole draft class. They're going to be much better.
Right.
On paper.
But
they still have a lot to prove.
They have to go out and do it.
And, you know, it's a good segue, because the whole Freddie Kitchens thing.
Unproven, I'm missing the Freddie Kitchens thing, by the way, but go ahead.
Unproven, has never been a head coach, certainly does get his players to buy in, has the quarterback's trust, which I think is extremely important with all of these egos. Because if Baker's like, no, trust in Freddie, Odell, Jarvis, they're going to get in line. The players behind them will get in line. Kareem Hunt will get in line. Nick Chubb will get in line. So I don't have a huge concern about it. I will say...
Yet you keep mentioning the concern about Freddie Kitchens.
No, I don't. But there's concern all over about it. Nationally, you bring it up to any member. Charles Davis was on with Bull and Fox yesterday. Everyone gets on Colin Cowherd, but he's mentioned it multiple times. Everywhere.
By the way, Colin continues to troll Baker and the Browns by saying the Steelers are winning the division.
Correct. But the point, but part of it is because it's a rookie head coach. And I will say.
And part of it is because he.
Correct.
He
I get it. That's part of his thing.
He pokes the bear. It's his shtick.
But to me, it's a legitimate concern. Like Freddie Kitchens going up against Bill Belichick in the first round of the, or it would be the second round because the Patriots always get a bye. That's an easy edge. I don't care if everyone's bought into Freddie Kitchens. It's not close. Like we can acknowledge that. Like I get it. You give Freddie Kitchens the edge over Zach Taylor in Cincinnati. Fair. Do I think he's going to outcoach John Harbaugh? Sorry. He's got to prove that. I don't. I don't think he's going to outcoach John Harbaugh. Maybe he does, but as of now, I don't think that. So the fact that people have that concern, I get it. The thing that makes it less for me is because all of these players buy in, and I think they're going to buy into Kitchens. But I still worry because I just don't know what he is yet.
If you put Brandon Whedon on the New England Patriots, okay?
Stop it.
If you switch out Tom Brady with Brandon freaking Whedon, is Bill Belichick the GOAT?
No.
Okay. You know what makes a good coach? Having really good players. That's what makes a good coach.
To a degree, yeah. Players matter, too.
You know what made Ty Lue a great coach? LeBron James.
I don't think LeBron... I don't think Ty Lue is a great coach.
And Kyrie Irving.
I don't think Ty Lue is a great coach. Is that a hot take here? I think he's okay.
You know,
but I know what you're saying. You know what, players help make the coaches.
The most difficult thing for a coach to do is manage the egos.
And I will say, I think Freddie can do that. I 100% think he can do that.
You know?
And he doesn't have an ego himself because Hugh could manage egos. I saw it, but he brought his ego to the table, and that does not work.
Yeah. That's what makes a good coach, is the ability to manage the talent that you have and the egos that comes with that talent. But you're not a good coach without good players, all right? And I think that the Freddie Kitchens has enough good players that they're going to win football games, and if they win football games, everyone's going to say what a great coach Freddie Kitchens is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it comes down to. Now, does that make Freddie Kitchens a great coach? Who's to say? We don't know what he's calling.
What if they go 10-6?
What if Freddie Kitchens called the dumbest play of all time, but Baker Mayfield was able to pull something out of his backside, and no one will ever know that Freddie Kitchens made a mistake calling a play?
Well, that's going to happen.
But you know what? I'm sure Bill Belichick's made plenty of gaffes over the years, but he's had the talent that's able to transcend it. And I think that what John Dorsey has done is he has assembled enough talent to where whatever deficiencies that Freddie Kitchens might currently have as a head football coach will be overlooked.
See, but I
it won't be noticed because the talent is going to be so freaking good. It's not going to matter.
I don't think they're going to overwhelm. Are they far and above the most talented team in the division? Like just head and shoulders above everybody
else?
They're
the best. I think the Cleveland Browns following. I wasn't willing to say this 2 weeks ago. Just ask Ken Carmen because we had a fight about it on the morning show. I was not willing to say that I thought that the Browns were the best team in the division. Today, on paper, stressing on paper.
Most talented.
I think that they have the most talented roster in the division.
Is it head and shoulders above everybody else?
Yes, I think so.
Do they have the best quarterback in the division?
Not yet.
Okay.
I think Ben Roethlisberger is still the best quarterback in the division.
Fair.
But I think Baker Mayfield has the potential
to pass him this year.
To pass him this year, absolutely.
To pass him this year, absolutely. But to me... I think it's all potential. Like
the Browns got better receivers than the Steelers and Ravens do. The Browns got better running backs than the Steelers and Ravens. The Browns have, I think, a better defensive line than the Steelers and Ravens. I think that they've got the most talented roster in the division. But having the most talented roster does not always equal success,
especially if you don't have the best coach. That's when coaching comes in. That's what I'm saying. So. This is just as much as we say it's a prove it year for Baker Mayfield, and it is. He's got to prove that he can take that next step and pass Ben and be the guy and put the team on his back and manage these egos. There's a lot of pressure on Baker. to deliver. There is. I think there's plenty of pressure on Baker. There's just as much, if not more, on Freddie Kitchens to show he's as good as Harbaugh, to show he's as good as Tomlin. Because if he's as good as those guys, the Browns will win the division. You're right. They have more talent. I think Baker, in a lot of ways, is better than Roethlisberger. He's a better leader right now. And I know Big Ben has two rings. Antonio Brown doesn't demand a trade if Baker Mayfield's his quarterback.
Probably not.
How about that for a take?
It's not a take. It's fact.
Because I think he's that good of a – like, he gets people to buy in. Let's go. And you see it in sports. Phillip Rivers has that quality. How many Chargers, even though they've not had a ton of talent throughout the years, have demanded a trade? None. Why? Because people buy into Phillip Rivers. They jump on his back. That's who Baker Mayfield reminds me of.
And that is why I'm not worried about Freddie Kitchens, because you have the players. You have genuine, legitimate – leaders on the field. And I think that Freddie Kitchens is he doesn't have an ego. Now, I'll be interested to see when the Browns are, if the Browns live up to the expectations and they're winning the games and they're getting all the national hype and they're on all the national radio and TV shows and prime time and all that stuff. I'll be interested to see, how the egos evolve, because you'll see what dooms the great teams is selfishness.
Sure.
Okay. That causes teams to fall apart. You know, we're waiting for the Golden State Warriors to fall apart. We're waiting for that selfishness to creep in, which will then cause them to collapse. We've never seen that with New England. We haven't seen the selfishness cause the Patriots dynasty to collapse. We saw it happen in Pittsburgh, though. We saw selfishness cause them to, because as you get good, guys want to get paid. The good news for the Browns is their guys are already paid. Baker will get paid when the CBA allows him to be paid, okay? But Jarvis is paid. Odell's
paid. Garrett's about to get paid.
Garrett's about to be paid. So that is when you really see the true colors, if you will. And you see the end to the dynasties, you see the end to the great teams, is when selfishness creeps in. And I think that Freddie Kitchens is a guy that can manage all that. Baker's not a selfish player. Baker's a selfish player in the sense he wants to be the greatest. He wants to win. And I don't think that that's being selfish. I think that's just, I call that heart and desire. Mm-hmm. And again, I go back to what I said earlier about John Dorsey and the type of player he has tried to bring into the Cleveland Browns. That self-motivated, hungry, want to be great, want to win type of player. Someone that you don't have to constantly kick in the ass to try and get the most out of. And that's always been the problem with the Browns. They've always had guys, they've had periods where they've had good players here, but you just had to constantly poke them in the ass to try and get them going.
Well, guess who? Think about it. They just released the linebacker from New England that they traded for. Yeah. What's his name?
Jamie Collins.
Jamie Collins. Forgot his name for a second because he's been forgettable. He's that guy, though. Extremely talented. There's a reason Bill moved him. Belichick moved him. That's why. That was the grape out of New England.
It's why I say you never, very rarely, you shouldn't say never, because there have been a couple guys that have left New England that have gone on to success. But typically when Bill Belichick's done with you, you're done. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, if Bill gives up on you and wants to move you, that's a warning sign.
You might have a year left, but that's it.
That is a major, major red flag. When Bill Belichick says, yeah, I'm willing to trade this guy.
Bill Belichick fired me 4 years ago.
He did?
No, I'm just kidding. You were totally going to judge me. Like, this kid's washed up. Andy, get him out of here.
You almost had me hooked there for a second.
He's Daryl Ryder. I'm James Erpine. This is the Cleveland Sports Beat podcast. Yeah, that I could get fired. Yeah, it is believable. Up next, let's dive into the Indians. It's baseball season. 8 days away. They played a game today in Japan. It was the start of the regular season of Major League Baseball.
I hate that,
Ichiro Suzuki, grand slam at 40-plus years old. Meanwhile, Daryl can barely walk at 40 years old. Ichiro Suzuki's hitting grand slams in major league games.
I'm flicking him off right
now,
by the way.
He's giving me the bird. Up next, let's talk Tribe right here on the Cleveland Sports Beat podcast.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
James Erfein and Daryl Ryder with you on the Cleveland Sports Beat podcast. Let's dive into it. Indians, they start their season in 8 days. They sign Carlos Gonzalez over the weekend. Last week, Paul Dolan made some interesting comments as well about money. You can read those at 923thefan.com. There's a lot there. There's some stuff on Carlos Gonzalez too, including video of cargo. All right, Daryl, I think the general perception of the Indians is, oh my God, why didn't they do more this offseason? And yet I think they have five really high-end starters, three great starters, two in Clevenger and Bieber in really high-end players. So you got five amazing starting pitchers. A bullpen that, to me, is going to be better than people realize, I think.
I hope you're right.
An outfield full of question marks. You have the Lindor thing, which we still don't know, hovering over things, even though I think, and I don't have inside knowledge here, but I think he's going to be ready for opening day. Plenty of question marks for the Indians. And yet everyone's still picking them to win the division. But no one
Because the division sucks.
But no one considers them a legitimate World Series contender.
Because the division sucks.
Where are you with the Indians and your optimism and your thoughts just going into the year about this team? On what they've done this offseason, because I think fan morale is at about as low as it can be for a team that's won the division three straight seasons.
Well, they clearly didn't do enough this offseason. They're going to win the division again because the division sucks and somebody has to win it. I don't think that they're a legitimate World Series contender. Hopefully, they will be motivated at the trade deadline to make a move that will put them in that category or position them.
And they have been willing to make those moves in the past.
Yes, they have.
That's something they've been extremely willing to.
You took the words you took the words right out of my mouth.
Great minds.
Hopefully that they will do that again, that they use the first half of the season to kind of assess what they have. And then at the trade deadline, they can make the move that they think or moves that they feel can kind of push them over the top. Health, obviously, is a concern for me. I think they're a very thin ball club.
That's fair.
They cannot afford to sustain injuries, especially down the stretch. So I am worried about that. I think the outfield's a complete cluster F and disaster. The rotation's great. Hopefully all these guys can throw complete games so we don't have to watch Gasoline Alley come in every night. Because the bullpen terrifies me. Hand's going to close, right?
Mm-hmm.
I like him.
Hand's going to close.
I'm worried about that.
You got Perez. Clipper got dinged up, but I actually really like the Tyler Clipper signing.
I'm worried about the eight guys that come before him. I hate this new they're doing it this year, right? Next year?
Next year, so
okay.
You're good.
Okay, because that rule blows, by the way. Hopefully
the three-batter rule for...
Yeah, hopefully the dumbasses in New York remove their... heads from their asses and
they're
going to
try it in
that.
The minors and see if
it's a joke. Might as well put a runner at second base in the 10th inning like they want to do too. Dipsticks. I'm a baseball purist. I hate some of the crap that they're trying to pull right now with the game. I don't care how many mound visits you have. Don't have commercial breaks that are 2.5 minutes. You realize like the commercial time in games that adds an hour to the game time. So instead of a 3.5 hour game, it's actually 2.5. Like, if you cut down on, but you can't because you're making
the
so
money.
Much, right. You need the advertising revenue to make up for all the rights fees that you're being paid for broadcast. And I understand that. I'm just saying that I don't think you can inherently speed up the game. They got the pitch clock now. I was driving down East 9th Street and I saw him testing the pitch clock at Progressive Field.
Not a fan of that.
Not a fan. No, not a fan.
All right, let's stick with the Indians, though.
Because I love the gamesmanship between the pitcher and the batter and the timing and making the batter uncomfortable and then the batter trying to make the pitch. That's inherently part of the game, okay? But
you are a baseball purist.
I am. So I hate all this crap that they're trying to do to the game. I really do. But as far as the Indians go, I have a lot of concern. They're going to win the division because it blows, and somebody's got to win it, and they do have the best team. They've got the best manager in the division, no question about it. I'm a huge Tito Francona fan, love Tito. They've got, with the Indians, if I remember correctly, since he's been the manager of the Indians, they got the best regular season record in Major League Baseball over that span, if I remember correctly. I'm concerned about the postseason. Like, the regular season, I'm not even concerned with, James. It's kind of like the Cavs with LeBron. I don't care about the regular season. I'm focused on the postseason. That's where my intention is. So, again, hopefully they're able to use the first half of the season to assess their ball club, see where things are at. Then at the end of July,
they
can pounce and make as many moves as they need to make, to get themselves in position to where they can compete for the World Series. Because that's what matters to me. Because you already have your ticket. Like, as far as I'm concerned, unless they have a bunch of devastating injuries, which no one expects or hopes to happen, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If they stay healthy, they're the best team in the division. They've already punched their ticket to October, okay? I already have my playoff tickets. That's why I'm so dead set focused on the postseason. A, because the Frankie Lindor window closing soon, and also because... been there, done that with the division titles. We've talked about it. I am zeroed in on winning in October, positioning yourself to win in October, because I already believe they're good enough to win from April through September.
That's fair. All right. So there's a lot that I want to break down there that you said that's interesting. I think everyone assuming they're going to win the division shouldn't.
Okay.
Seriously, like it's hard to win a division. It's hard. You mentioned how thin they are.
I'm not trying to downplay the achievement, but it's
no, but it's going to be hard for them to do it this year. Like, don't assume that because you might be disappointed.
I think Minnesota's better. I don't know so much about. I think Chicago's a year away.
Honestly, Tyler Clifford goes down in the bullpen, and I'm like, ugh. Like, we'll see about the bullpen. Like, no one even knows who the hell Tyler Clifford is.
They're thin,
and that to me, Lindor, who I think is going to be ready. You don't want any type of injury to linger. But they're thinner now than ever. They have question marks in the outfield. I do think...
Jason Kipnis is going to be an everyday starter now,
right? Second base. So not outfield. So outfield, you're looking at... I think Greg Allen will be in one of the corners. Eventually, Carlos Gonzalez, the other corner. And Leonis Martin in center. I think that is... their ideal center field starting mid to late April after Cargo gets up to speed. Before that,
so you think
maybe
Cargo's
Jake
in, he's...
I wouldn't say that, but I think he has enough to offer.
Okay.
Like, when you look at him last year...
Better option.
I mean, he was an
all-star
in 2016, and he's 33. Right. It's not like he's... This isn't the Hanley Ramirez signing. It isn't to me. Like, Carlos Gonzalez was never cut. He was never released. And he's not the all-star he once was. But do I think he can be solid in right field? I do. And I also think it makes sense to move Jake Bowers to first base, his natural position, where he's comfortable. The Indians traded for him for a reason. They think he's going to be a star one day. They think he's going to be really good. He's 23 years old. He's comfortable at first. Don't play him in the outfield.
Yeah.
And that was my gripe all offseason. Why didn't you go get these outfielders? Maybe now you're seeing why. They get Cargo on a completely non-guaranteed deal.
Yeah.
And they'll have to pay him $2 million if he does make it to the majors.
Which is a bargain.
And if they do, if he is in the minors, spring training and then the minors, and this is only for him to get ready, and doesn't show...
Yeah, what is it, like April 20th or
April
something?
April 20th
he has
is
to
the
be
deadline. Yep. So if he doesn't show enough, then they'll say, all right, let's part ways, and he'll get a chance to jump elsewhere. Now, I think there's a lot of pressure on him, and I wrote this yesterday at 92.3thefan.com. A lot of pressure on him because if the Indians, who are outfieldless, don't want you,
outfieldless,
then
like that,
people are going to think you're washed up.
Right.
So, and I don't think he is. I think he has a lot to bring and a
lot
to
offer. If
you're
playing left out on the Indians, you're probably not going to make it.
Correct. That's a good way to put it, too. So to me, that him making it will, one, says a lot about the Indians' need for an outfielder, but two, gives them... kind of a legitimate out. Like, Leonis Martin's a big leaguer. He's not a star. Pretty good defender. Greg Allen, I think he's going to be a great defender. Obviously young. Carlos Gonzalez is proven. And on nights when you do want to play Jake Bowers in the outfield, if you do, you can put Cargo at DH or give him an off day because he is 33. So I think they have some flexibility there. But they're banking on a lot of things to work. Leonis Martin recovering, and he's, by all accounts, 100% healthy, good to go. But is everything going to be okay with him playing center field 150 games this year? Greg Allen, young player. Questionable bullpen. Perez at catcher. You're banking on Jake Bowers, who's only played 1 year, and albeit he's comfortable at first base, 1 year in the majors.
Right.
You're banking on him playing at a high level, or at least a competent level. Jason Kipnis has to be competent at second. You need Frankie Lindor to stay healthy after not playing all spring. You need Carlos Gonzalez to show some pop. I mean, they need this and this and this.
You need Jose Ramirez to end the season strong.
Sure. All of these players need to perform in the postseason. And by the way, we're assuming that the rotation stays healthy. We're assuming Corey Kluber doesn't take a step back.
Which, by the way, you know is not going to happen.
No, something's going to happen there. So there's just a lot up in the air. And I get it. You know, when you mention the bullpen or you mention starters, Danny Salazar at some point is going to rejoin the club and can give them a boost in the middle of the summer, maybe right before or right after the All-Star break. You got Bradley Zimmer, who could come back in battle for an outfield spot when he's 100% healthy. You have names. You have guys. But do they have game? Like, can they play? I think Greg Allen, I'm a believer in him. I think he could play. I think Leonis Martin, if he's healthy, and by all accounts he is, I think he'll be able to contribute. So I could see it working. I could see the path working. But is it good enough to win a World Series?
No.
Unless Corey Kluber and Trevor Bauer and Carlos Carrasco and Shane Bieber and Mike Clevenger, and not necessarily in that order, but unless they ball out, and that includes being relievers in the postseason because you usually only use three starters, unless they just ball out and put the team on their back and pitch like it's 2016 and just destroy it, and Brad Hand's clutch, and the pitching is just so amazing that they could go toe-to-toe with the Yankees and the Astros, and I think a lot of fans are with you thinking about the postseason. If that rotation can't do that, I don't see the path, even with a move in July, where they're legitimate, bona fide, not only World Series contenders, but they have a legitimate World Series chance. I just don't see it. Now, maybe it does happen, but I think it goes down to that rotation and the pressure that's going to be putting on them in October. They have to perform.
The scenario that I have in my head is the Kluber pitch continues to pitch well first half of the season. You got Salazar coming at back on the back end. I think what I could see happen is them trading Kluber at the trade deadline to get the package they need to push them over, and then Salazar comes in and slides in at the back end. Trevor Bauer now then becomes
your
ace because he has pitched like – I mean, they've got two to three bona fide aces.
Mm-hmm. And I think Clevenger is a two on a lot of teams.
And I admit, I
compete for a one in some teams.
I've been dead set against trading Corey Kluber. I don't believe that you're positioning yourself to compete for a World Series title by trading a two-time Cy Young Award winner. However, looking at what they have in the rotation and with Salazar coming back in the second half of the season, potentially,
mm-hmm.
I look at it as that's where, similar to what John Dorsey did with dealing with, you know, Kevin Zeitler.
From a position of strength
to get what I need. Like, if I can turn Corey Kluber into a top-of-the-line reliever and a more than serviceable everyday outfielder, all right, that I can control going forward, because that's what the Indians are trying to do here. They're trying to win while also retool. They're trying to reload the gun on the fly. Then that's, I think that is a move that would make sense. I've kind of in my head brought myself to say, okay, trading Corey Kluber in this scenario at the trade deadline to get my stud reliever and potential stud outfielder that I can control for a couple of years going forward for Corey Kluber makes complete sense, because I've got Trevor Bauer to step in, be my number one starter, and everybody else in the rotation scoots up.
It makes sense.
And Danny Salazar then slides in, and he's my number five. And based on how Danny Salazar is pitched, the fact that Danny Salazar is my fifth starter, I still have a pretty damn good rotation. You know what I'm saying?
Here's my question with that, because you're talking about a deadline deal right now, and Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic reported this.
Ken Rosenthal
of The Athletic reported that the Padres interested in a deal, still talking with the Indians. There's an article posted at 92.3thefan.com about that. Here's the problem. Let's say you're contending. Let's say you're in first place. You're going to win the division again. Trade deadline's coming up. It's July 28th, and you're like, all right, let's try to get a bat, an outfielder, a reliever, and a minor leaguer or two for Kluber or Bauer. Either one. Let's try to get that.
I'd probably trade Kluber because he's older.
Fair. The problem with that is whoever's trading for him is trying to win now. They're not trying to win later.
That's fair.
They're trying to win now.
They're trying to do what you're doing.
So are they going to give you an outfielder that can help you in the playoffs now, not just help you day-to-day? There are a lot of outfielders. Carlos Gonzalez is going to help day-to-day. Do I really expect him to have a big October run for the Indians? No. But if he helps get them there, that's enough. That's great. I don't know how many outfielders they're going to be able to acquire from a contending team, even if it's National League, that can help them at the deadline. Same thing with relievers. Because if you're a team trading for Kluber, it is not going to be for next season.
You're going in now.
So that, to me, that's the challenge. And
it has to be a win-win trade for both teams.
And it's going to be tough to find that. Because the Indians, their asking price, and I think it should be high, has been help our big league club get better, help our minor league system get better. Because we want both.
Right, because what's happened the last couple of years, and this isn't a criticism, not by any stretch of the imagination, I think the Indians have depleted their minor league system because they have been going for it at the big league level.
Sure.
And that's what the good organizations do, is they use that minor league system to, because that's all potential down there. There's nothing proven down there. You're using those assets to make you better. The problem I think the Indians face now is they've depleted that. You know, they went from having one of the better minor league systems. Now there's a little bit of a talent drain down there. And again, that's not a criticism. That's a byproduct of trying to win at the big league level now. So I just when I look at the Indians, I'm not really concerned about, even if they start slow in April, I won't be concerned. I don't get concerned until the end of May, because that's usually the quarter pole is when you're really okay. You can kind of start to see things come into focus a little bit. The Indians historically don't hit well in April because it's cold. It's too cold to hit.
Playing baseball in the cold, by the way,
sucks.
Is the worst.
It is. It's horrible.
In high school, when I the worst experience. And I was on some bad teams.
I mean, getting a base hit would hurt.
It hurts.
Goes right.
Fielding.
Shoots right up your arm, down your spine.
The worst. It's the worst. And I remember people brought us hand warmers and stuff to the games because it would be so cold. And if you're on a bad team and you're on the field for
high school baseball, there's no such thing as a rain delay. You play through it.
because you can't get your games in anyway. It's 40 degrees and drizzling.
Oh man.
Gloomy, windy. Oh, but that's fun.
It is the worst. But that's how I'm approaching this Indian season and how I'm evaluating what they're doing or trying to figure out, you know. It's all about what can they do to position themselves to have the most success in October, because I really do believe they've got a good enough ball club to win the division. To your point, not easy to do. It's hard.
I do think they are the favorite.
162 game grind. It really is a grind. It is. They've got but Terry Francona is I think one of the best managers in the game. He knows how to get his teams through that grind. I am focused more so on what they're going to be able to do at the deadline to make themselves a World Series contender. Because that's the key to the season. Like right now, they're good enough to win their division, but they're not good enough to win the World Series. Or I don't even know if they're good enough to advance in October. Okay. Because I think Houston's gotten a little better.
No, I think Houston's better than them. I think Boston's better than them. I think New York's better than them.
Right.
You're going to play one of those teams.
Right.
So there you go.
So to me, it's about whatever they can come up with at that trade deadline. And if they sit on their hands at the trade deadline, that'll tell me where they are going to. Like right now, it's easy to have the hot take about ownership not spending money and calling them cheap, which I think is complete BS. They're business people that can't afford to spend more than they can afford to spend. They're just being realistic. They have overspent. They had to reel the budget in a little bit, And by their standards, they're still spending outside their comfort zone. And hopefully come the trade deadline, the revenues will be such that they'll look at and say, hey, you know, we can afford to go for it again this year and invest.
But what do you think Dolan's – and again, this is up at 92.3thefan.com. Dolan coming out and doing that sit-down with Cash.
Stupid.
There's got to be something behind that.
Well, here's the thing.
Because after an offseason of you don't do that – knowing that your fan base is pissed off because you haven't done anything right. This offseason. You sit down and you cry poor.
Yeah, he's trying to explain. I get why he said what he said.
Why? Is it? There's got to be great. It's got to be more than, let's explain why we didn't make moves.
Because he's trying to be honest and say, hey, we don't have the money
to
spend.
That's stupid.
I know. Again,
shouldn't have said anything.
Fans don't care about your money, okay? It's not my money. I don't care. Your job, from a fan's perspective, your job as the owner is to win at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Dan Gilbert does that very well. Wins at all costs. We'll spend whatever it takes to win
at all
costs.
Except on a GM.
Except for, I'm talking about on the roster. Okay.
you know what I meant.
I know exactly
He will go. He will spend.
But crying, trying to explain to fans, your fans, your economic difficulties is not going to win you any points. It's not going to win you sympathy. It's not going to win you empathy. It's not going to win you anything with them. He shouldn't have said, I understand why, because he's just, he was being honest. Okay. He's guilty of being honest, but it did not help his cause. It did not win him any points with fans. Cause fans, quite frankly, don't give a crap. Okay. Yeah. All they care about is that you're going out and putting the team in the best position. Because what they think of now is you can't afford to own the team. That's how I think of them. I think they're good. I think they're damn good managers.
Do you believe they're losing money?
I don't know, because I don't. I think it's completely unfair for me to say yes or no to that question just because I haven't seen their books. I have no data to support it. Support that thought.
You own a
way.
House, right?
Yeah.
All right. I owned a house in my time in Cincinnati. I don't here. I live in downtown Cleveland. When you own a house, you're spending money on the mortgage.
Yep.
On all these different repairs and things that you wouldn't before.
I'm aware.
You're aware. I am too. It sucks.
Very aware.
You become a maintenance man. You try to do stuff on your own too to save money.
There's a reason I've not gone on any vacation in 8 years.
All right. See, there you go. Right. Your home, to a degree, costing you money. You could live in a one-bedroom apartment.
You know what my vacations are? Fixing up the house.
There you go. But the point is you sink money into a house. You do.
It is a money pit.
But there are some pluses to it. But if I told you your house would be worth four times what you paid for it, four times. At the end of this, at the end of all the maintenance, after replacing the furnace,
I think my house
after replacing the central air and putting a new roof on it and insulating it and putting a new front door, which you actually had that issue. I'm just naming issues right now. I don't know if they are. And after you had to repair the flooded basement, you were going to get four times what you paid for it. Guess what? All of that headache, all that spending, all that losing money was worth it. And that, to me, is what pisses me off about this, about his comments. We're losing money. Yeah, you're kind of losing money for now, but whenever you sell the team, you're going to get way more than the $323 million you paid for it.
Yeah.
Period. Like, he's going to make way more. It's a great investment by the Dolans. Cry poor for me.
I wish my house was worth what I paid for it now.
But
it's worth significantly less now than what I paid for it.
You know what I'm saying, though? Like, if it was worth four times, you'd feel great about
it. I get it.
I'm going to replace this furnace? Yeah. Go get the outfielder. And by the way, the Indians, on the other hand, would argue, we did. We got Carlos Gonzalez. We waited the market out, and we got him. Because if they would have signed him 2 months ago, that was a move that would have been praised.
By the way, Major League Baseball needs to get their head out of their ass. And the fact that these players are not being signed until spring training is a joke.
Yeah. I hate the setup. It just be a non-guaranteed?
You know when this stuff needs to happen? It needs to happen at the winter meetings. Like, that's when stuff needs
to come in.
That's when stuff needs to be done. Like, the NFL, free agency's over, okay? For all intents and purposes, NFL free agency is now over a week later.
Mm-hmm.
All the big deals that have been done have basically been done. There might be one or two that pops, but it's done.
When the Browns get Ndamukong Suh and Eric Berry.
But you know like, as an NFL fan, I knew this year on March 11th, stuff was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. NBA trade deadline, stuff's going to happen. First day of NBA free agency, which is usually around the July 4th weekend, somewhere around there, stuff's going to happen. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Major League Baseball, you have no effing clue when anything's going to happen. How can you market to your fans? The old cliche, deadlines spur action. Major League Baseball needs deadlines. Like, I can't believe how late into spring training you got before your stars started signing contracts.
Manny Machado, Bryce Harper. It's insane.
Right.
Carlos Gonzalez, people think he's washed. He had 276 last year with 16 home runs.
That's
a pretty good major league player.
You're making my point for me.
I agree with you.
These guys should have been signed in December.
Mm-hmm.
They need to...
Cargo in February?
This is why the NBA and the NFL is able to so consistently dominate the news cycle and the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a fan, I have an expectation of when the good stuff's going to happen. In baseball, you've got no clue. The games take too damn long, and I got no clue when any of my players are going to be signed. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, the only deadline you have now is the trade deadline. And there have been many a baseball trade deadline that have been complete duds. And there have been some really great baseball trade deadlines.
Could you imagine if the Indians would have got Harper last year?
Oh, my God. But
they tried.
They did. But so I think that's baseball's got so many things they need to fix.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of stuff hurts teams like the Indians, you know, because just because people don't go to the ballpark doesn't mean that they're not watching the Indians. They're just staying home watching them from the comfort of their living room, where the bathroom's 10 feet away and the refrigerator's a couple of feet away. And, you know, they don't have to pay for parking and they don't have to, you know, go through all the, you know, all the stuff that comes with, you know, going to the ball. But they do pay attention to the team. There are a lot of Indians fans.
Mm-hmm.
They don't show up to the ballpark. And I think that obviously is something that does hurt the Indians, is that loss of the ballpark revenue, you know. And I've said for years, having people in the park is more important than the price of your ticket. You know, you want to get people in the ballpark and make the money off the concessions, make the money off the merchandising, and, you know, that's the ballpark experience. And that's a challenge that the Indians have had for years and years and years. Like, they struggle to get 2 million fans to the ballpark, and they've been in the playoffs the last 4 years.
Mm.
Okay.
That's a baseball thing.
I understand, though, but that is an economic reality, though, that the Dolans do have to deal with.
Sure.
Okay.
And they're going to make $700+ million on their investment when they sell.
At the time, the television deal that they struck when they sold Sports Time Ohio to Fox Sports, and then they got the $40 million a year. At the time, that was a great deal. Today, that $40 million is like pennies on the dollar. I think the Tampa Bay Rays are raking in $80 million. The Tampa Bay Rays are making twice what the Cleveland Indians are on the TV deal. Okay, so there is some economic reality to what the Dolans have to say about why they're not going out and spending and spending and spending. The problem is fans don't give a crap. I don't give a crap because it's not my money. And to your point, they're going to make it on the back end if they ever sell the team.
Yeah. And okay. That's what irked me the most. Don't say you're losing money when you have this investment.
Fans never, ever, 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 ever want to hear we can't afford
because
it.
Because they could lose $10 million a year for the next 10 years and still make double, probably triple
and
on their investment.
When you own a professional sports team, you're basically signing up for an inherent loss annually. Okay?
Sure.
The pro sports team is your toy, per se. Okay? It's your hobby. Okay, it's something fun for you to do, right? Most professional sports owners have outside business interests that allow them to buy the club, and then basically allow them to play fantasy whatever sport they own.
I'd be a good owner.
Where the Dolans?
I would be such a good owner if I could do that.
Where the Dolans?
Man,
I think
I need to get rich.
You know, they have to use the Indians also to support. You know what I mean? They actually have to run the Cleveland Indians not like a hobby. They have to run it like a business. And again, fans don't care.
It compares a lot. You know what it compares a lot to? A team I covered in Cincinnati, the Bengals and Mike Brown.
Right.
And how it's their family business.
The Raiders.
Business.
The Raiders and Mark Davis. And why he's moving to Vegas.
And they don't have that cash flow reportedly to get Le'Veon Bell.
I got news from Mark Davis. Just because you're moving to Vegas, that's not going to save you. Art Modell moved the Cleveland Browns to Baltimore, and he still had to sell the team.
Yeah.
Because he was that bad of a businessman, okay? And so I respect and understand where the Dolans are financially. They have spent money the last few years. The Dolans discounts and the cheap Dolans moniker I don't think is completely fair. But again, fans just, they don't want to hear about your economics. All they care about is winning and what you're doing to help win. And when you say, I don't have the money to win, even though I've got the window now, I don't have the money to win, that turns fans off.
Yeah, I was shocked he did that interview.
And I think that, you know, again, I understand what he was saying. He was just trying to be straight, open, honest, transparent. But I'm telling you, man, I think he ended up doing a disservice because now people think, oh, well, the Dolans are being cheap again. They're not investing. They're still spending, what, $115 million, $120 million on this year's payroll, which is, I know that just rolls off the tongue like it's no big deal. That's still a hell of a lot of money for a team that typically used to spend around $80 million on a payroll, okay?
I mean, it's all right.
But
$120 is all right. You're right, though. They need to make some moves at the deadline.
That's what it comes down to.
We'll have a complete Indian season preview next week on the podcast. Maybe we'll do a mailbag where we can answer questions from the fans. I think we should do that. We haven't done a lot of baseball.
I think I should turn the tables on you. Since you did it to me, I need to do it to you.
The mailbag?
We need to do a mailbag.
Yeah, we'll do a mailbag next week. We'll preview the season. And man, I'm excited. Baseball's here, baby! Baseball's here, even though people are excited to watch Baker Mayfield take batting practice. And that's the other thing, man. If the Browns are good and the Cavs get Zion,
I guarantee
you can't not go for it if you're the Indians. No one's going to...
Free marketing for the Indians. Bring Baker, bring Odell, bring Jarvis, have him take BP. There's three sellouts for you right there.
There you go. That's right.
Just don't do it in April.
It'll be cold in April.
Right. That's why you don't do it in April.
Do it in the All-Star game will help too.
The All-Star,
as far as revenue for them, they are going to get some revenue from the All-Star game.
Right.
No doubt about it. That
will help, but...
No one's really talked about that. Come on, man. This is the year you're supposed to go for. You got the All-Star game. He's Daryl Ryder. I'm James Erpine. Complete Indians preview next week. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review. Also on Stitcher and Google Play and every podcast posted at 923thefan.com. Thank you so much for listening. Back at it next week right here on the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.